Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. I've got Sam and Lee in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Brad. How are you?
Good morning. Are you guys cold enough? I know that you guys like the cold. You're from the north.
Yeah, I was just saying earlier, I can't remember a December that's been this cold, this fast, for this long.
You don't know the exact temperature historically?
No trivia today, Lee.
Well, what I do know is that yesterday the low was the lowest it's been in 90 years.
90. You remember that? Zero.
No, I heard that.
You heard someone else told you?
Absolutely. You know I'm not going to retain that bit of information.
I know you're the oldest person here, so I figured you might know that firsthand.
Is it that cold in Dallas, Kevin? We have Kevin Ritz on the other end in Dallas.
No, it's going to be a balmy 75 degrees here today.
Yeah, right.
I don't believe you.
Okay,
no, I'm not joking.
Okay, Kevin, we're sending Brad back to you and swapping weather.
I'm just coming back to Dallas. We'll just leave it at that. Well, we got a great show today, full house, so we're going to get right to it. We have, just introduce our guests quickly. Here in Atlanta, we have two guests from Aging Services of Georgia. We have Walter Coffey, who is the president and CEO, and we have Holly Beauchamp, who is part of the Center for Positive Aging, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. And in Dallas, we have three guests from the Hospice Center, and I'm going to let Kevin introduce them. But welcome to you all, and I'm going to toss it over to you, Kevin.
Thanks, Brad. With me today in Dallas, we have Rachel Pierce, who's the Executive Director of the Hospice Center. We also have Meredith Biltz, who is LMSW with the Hospice Center, and Donna Talley, the Director of Business Development for the Hospice Center. And we're going to start with Rachel Pierce. Rachel, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got to be with the Hospice Center.
Okay, sure. Like you said, I'm Rachel Pierce, and I grew up in Katy, Texas, which is west of Houston, about 300 miles from Dallas, and I went to school at the University of Texas at Austin. And after college, I started out doing some marketing and then got a job at Pro Systems and worked in healthcare technology, and then went into infrastructure solutions and worked in service line management. So I definitely started out completely opposite from anything like healthcare and hospice. But after gaining some of that business knowledge, my father is the owner of the Hospice Center, and he decided to, for months, tried to recruit me over to help him run the company up here in Dallas. He still lives in the Houston area, so he was kind of far away. And I started as executive director in March of 2009. It didn't take long for me to kind of get pulled over from the business side into the clinical side, just because hearing about all these families and listening to social workers and chaplains and nurses talk about them, it just really drew me in. And so I've kind of taken on greater responsibilities with the clinical side as well now.
All right. Well, thank you. And Meredith, what about you?
Sure. Hi, I'm Meredith Biltz. I'm the social worker with the Hospice Center. I grew up a daughter of a military father, so I pretty much grew up along the eastern coast, usually in the North Carolina, South Carolina area. Then I went to college in a little tiny Baptist college in Charlotte, North Carolina called Wingate University. Left there with a degree in psychology, and then got married and started a family, moved to Texas. Then after a while, decided that I was going to go back to school. Had a degree in psychology, just really was drawn into wanting to help people more than just the traditional psychology, which, you know, you think of just sitting and listening to somebody in a small office or a conference room. Felt like I wanted to be more involved and just felt like social work would be a good fit for where I was. So I decided to apply to the University of Texas at their graduate program in social work, was accepted, and went to graduate school while I was raising three kids, and was able, in the middle of graduate school to also go to work with Katrina evacuees. So I worked for 2.5 years helping those folks kind of restart their life from the Dallas area, worked for a couple of different federal programs, and then the opportunity arose to try hospice, and the hospice center was willing to give me a chance, and they kind of taught me most of what I know about hospice, and I've been with them for about 2 years now.
All right. And Donna, what about you?
Well, I grew up in the Dallas area. I actually started in home health in 91, and in 2000 worked for a home health / hospice company, and ended up getting recruited over to a hospice company, and have been in hospice since then. And I have been with the hospice center for 2 years in January.
All right. Rachel, why don't you tell us a little bit about the hospice center, where its roots are, and how it came to be where it is now?
Sure. Okay. Well, for me and my dad, our first experience with hospice was my grandfather, his father. That was about 7 years ago, and it really opened our eyes to all the wonderful things that hospice can do for not only the patient but also the family. So that was kind of first what pulled us in. And my dad, James Pierce, he's an entrepreneur, and he actually had owned an EMS company, and basically got a call from some friends one day telling him about an opportunity to buy a hospice. And he was interested, especially because he had had that experience with hospice. And he came up and he said, he's actually told the story that he originally wasn't going to buy the company until he met with a family and just felt just so moved that he could really help people who are going through this time in their lives, a very difficult time, that where we come in and not only help the patient but also help the family. So in September 2007, he decided to buy the hospice center. And we operate out of Richardson, Dallas area, as well as Sherman. And then in March of 2009, he decided to buy another company in Oklahoma, which is Sunshine Hospice. And we have two different names, but we all operate as one. So we kind of stretch from the Dallas to the Oklahoma area. And like I said, and then a couple years later, he recruited me over. And that's it, I guess.
All right. And I'll leave this open to whoever is best suited to answer it. You know, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what exactly hospice is and what it does. So why, for our listeners who may not quite understand that, can you kind of tell us a little bit about what exactly hospice is?
Sure. Well, you're right. A lot of people look at hospice as, for one thing, they think it's when the person is really at the end of their life. And reality, hospice can come in months in advance. And not only work with the patient, but also the family. We have some core services. We have the nursing services that comes in and does visits. And one of their main functions is pain management. We also have, like Meredith, social workers that help with the family. And it could be anything from just dealing with the grief and the issues they're going through, or maybe helping make the funeral arrangements, anything they really need. We also have chaplains who can help with spiritual concerns or spiritual guidance, or just be there in this difficult time. We have a medical director, and the doctors are overseeing the care. We also have volunteers who can be there to just be companions or read to the patients, or you know, whatever it is they need. And I think the important, and one important thing is that, you know, hospice isn't just for cancer patients. It's for anyone who's terminally ill. And we provide a wide range of services, and it really is customized to whatever that person and that family needs.
All right. Thank you for the background and the things you offer. From a social work standpoint, what's kind of the most rewarding thing that you find, Meredith, when you're working with families?
Probably the most rewarding is when a family is able to resolve some conflict, or maybe many times you'll see a family member that maybe hasn't been involved, or perhaps even the patient themselves has ostracized a family member. And so a lot of times I'm able to kind of come in and help facilitate some of that. And it's really a nice thing to see a family be able to make some peace and just be able to say the things that they want to say, and to be able to see that is kind of a cool thing.
Oh, great. You know, we talked a little bit before we went on the air about some of the pro bono work and the nonprofit side. Can you tell us a little bit about what exactly it is you do from that standpoint?
Sure. One of the things we do that I would probably say is one of the most rewarding things for me is that we are able to take on some pro bono patients. So, you know, when a patient comes to us from whatever source and basically they have no funding, we oftentimes can take them on and provide those, you know, the pain medications, the visits from the nurse and the social workers, the chaplains, and just be there with them, because it's a hard thing to go through without hospice. I feel like, you know, hospice can provide so much. So that's basically what we do. It's just providing the same care we would for anyone else for someone who doesn't have the funding.
I'd like to jump in and ask a question if I could.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I think of hospice, and I think when most people think of hospice, they think about hospice as being something that is provided by Medicare. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that. How does it happen that you have patients that don't have any access to funding? What would an example of that kind of a scenario be?
Sounds like you're asking a funding question. And typically the way that we would have an unfunded patient is going to be someone who does not qualify for Medicare based on age or their illness. Either they're under the age of 65. You know, a case that, you know, we recently had was a lady that I think she was late 50s. She had end-stage pancreatic cancer. She'd had to quit her job. She did not have any private insurance. And she was at the county hospital, Parkland in Dallas. And anyway, her son just happened to call and was looking for resources. And we worked together with the hospital, and we basically were able to bring her on and get her the help that she needed. So that's a typical case that we're going to see, somebody that is either too young to qualify for Medicare, they make too much money to qualify for Medicaid, or, you know, they may just be at such an end stage in their illness that there's just not enough time to get them qualified for Medicaid. Or, you know, sometimes we're looking at, you know, a young person who, for whatever reason, you know, they just don't have traditional insurance that would cover that.
Thank you.
If you're dealing with somebody who doesn't have the funding, what's the best route for them to take to get in touch with somebody that can help them out? Is it through the hospital? Is it through just...
Sometimes. Usually, you know, the best route, the case I was just telling you about, that was just a son that just looked us up in the phone book. We probably were the first hospice that said, yeah, let's put you in touch with the social worker. You know, that's the best thing is your social workers are going to be the best resource either at the hospital or if you just call a hospice and say, hey, I need to talk to the social worker, they're going to be able to help you
okay.
with that.
All right. If you had a piece of advice to give to families or seniors themselves, what would that be?
The biggest piece of advice I would say would be just from a social work standpoint, know that the social worker is really a helper, a friend. He or she is not looking to come in and judge a lifestyle or anything like that. Really, you know, my role on the team is to be, sometimes I'm a coordinator of care. Sometimes I'm there to answer questions, you know, and I can help with community resources. So it's not just hospice because, you know, we might have a patient that's on hospice and they could benefit from a state program. And then my job is to help work through that. But really the biggest piece of advice, you know, like I said, would be just to say, if you think you might qualify, you know, for hospice, talk to that social worker. You know, we are in this business, because we love people and we want to help. And, that would be the best thing I could think of.
All right. Well, great. Thank you, ladies. And with that, we'll, throw back to Atlanta.
Before we do that, can we get some, contact information?
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot. If our listeners want to get in touch with the hospice center, what's the best route to do?
Probably the best route, and we're actually 24/7, would be to call our main line phone number, which is 972-664-0030. And we also have a website, which is www.thehospicecenter.net.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for participating this morning. We appreciate that. Great information. And we will bring it back to Atlanta here. And as we mentioned before, we have two guests here from Aging Services of Atlanta. We have Walter Coffey and Holly Beauchamp. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here this morning. Walter, if I could start with you and just have you give us a little background on yourself, where you're from, where you went to school, and how you got to be where you are.
Okay. Well, I was born in Panama City, Florida, raised in Huntsville, Alabama, have lots of various education. But I guess throughout my life, I've always gravitated to loving older people. I grew up next door to my grandmother and went to nursing homes with her to visit from the time I could walk. And I thought everybody loved older people and communicated with them. And so I just grew up with that love and joy in my life. And in the first part of my life, I had gone to seminary. I was a staff minister. And I found myself really gravitating to the senior adults in the congregations that I served. And so in the late 80s, I decided I really wanted to work with older adults. And so I went back and got a graduate degree and certificate in gerontology and master's in public administration with nonprofit management, and started working with older people, really first with the Georgia Council on Aging, and then I worked with the Alzheimer's Association, and then found myself really in a career in housing for seniors, first starting to work at Presbyterian Village. In 2000, I became the president and CEO of Aging Services of Georgia, and it's a perfect match for me. We are the American Association of Homes and Services for the Aging, ASA, state affiliate for Georgia. And we represent nonprofit as well as other mission-driven organizations, so we can have for-profit members as well. So we're a membership association, and our members serve currently almost 127,000 older Georgians every year. So we have housing members all the way from hospice organizations like we were just hearing about to the big campus retirement communities called continuing care retirement communities. We have nursing home members, assisted living residents, a lot of affordable housing, low-income housing members, as well as just private pay independent living housing. We have adult day providers and the small personal care homes that serve 2 to 6 residents as well. And then we have community-based service members that do provide Meals on Wheels and home care and home repair and case management services all over the state. So it's a very exciting mix of aging services. Our goal is to try to represent the entire continuum of aging services and really look at aging services horizontally instead of individual type silos that often we find ourselves talking about, because aging services is really starting to be reflected in a horizontal manner where different groups need to understand how each other work together and how they best serve seniors throughout the state. So we do a lot of things like that. I think the reason that members join associations like ours are really for 3 main reasons. The first is for policy representation, because we do a lot of policy work with our legislators, and we work with the regulatory departments on how those laws are implemented. As you know, they're constantly changing, and now with state budget crisis, there's a lot of ways that states are trying to find to save money to protect Medicaid dollars, to make those dollars go further. So there's a lot of changes in states, and we pay a lot of attention to those issues. The second reason is for education and professional development, and we actually have a separate nonprofit called the Georgia Institute on Aging, where we do about 40 education events a year for our provider members and also non-members, but anybody in our field throughout that are professionals in our field of aging. So that professional development is critical. And the third one is really professional networking, where mission-driven providers come together and share information and talk about best practices. And it's one of the things that's it sounds like it may be the not the most important thing, but as I've learned over the last 10 years, it's been critical to develop those relationships and partnerships where people share information and best practices and how to best serve our elders throughout the state. And then one of the things that we really want to get to focusing on today is we have another arm of our association that's really focusing on helping to educate and connect consumers, and that is the Center for Positive Aging. So under Aging Services of Georgia, we have the two nonprofits that are our education arm, the Institute, and our consumer arm, which is the center.
And joining us from the Center for Positive Aging is Holly Beauchamp. Good morning. How are you, Holly?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Great job. Segue over to her. You stole my thunder, Walter. I have nothing else to say. Holly, won't we begin? Tell us about yourself and how you came to the Center for Positive Aging.
I grew up in upstate New York, very small town, the complete opposite of Atlanta, but yeah, I found myself at Monmouth University in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I got my degree in business administration with a concentration in marketing. Again, kind of went the complete opposite route of nonprofits and what we're doing at Aging Services. I started off my career at Enterprise Rent-A-Car as a management trainee, kind of diving into what it takes to run a business, everything from the financials to how to deal with clients. And from there, I went into telecommunication sales and, just, you know, kind of focused in on that. And then I found myself unemployed, and I'm currently, my term with the center is through AmeriCorps Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it would be like the domestic Peace Corps mm-hmm. is what I'm doing. And you sign up for a year of service. And Vista's main mission is to eliminate poverty. That's really what they go to, they strive for. So you're working oftentimes with nonprofits, and it can be anything from aging services to literacy volunteers, mm-hmm. Meals on Wheels, programs like that. So that's how I came to the Aging Services in the center.
Let's talk about what the Center for Positive Aging does. Give us at a high level, what's its mission, what's its purpose?
The main purpose of the center, if I had to sum it up, is pretty much trying to bridge the gap between consumers and aging services. There's a lot of information out there, and most times it comes in need of a crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, something happens with a parent or a grandparent, and it's just over. It can be extremely overwhelming. So what the center really tries to do is be available 24 hours a day through our website. And there are really four main areas. It's really, you can find everything from understanding the different types of housing, whether you need to fully go into retirement housing or if you just need care at home. We also have business and product services for elders. And then we've really, really tried to develop our database of quality providers. And these are, again, the four housing for seniors, care at home, business products and services, and congregations. And they're there. They sign a quality pledge through the center. And it's just, you know, simple things, properly licensed, having a good reputation in the community. They sign on to be a quality provider. They go on our website. So when consumers are looking for these housing providers, they don't have to go to a website where they're overwhelmed. There's not going to be 3,000 housing providers throughout the state. We really try to keep it simple, you know, keep it under 10 for most cases. So when you look, it's there in front of you, and you don't have to do 10 pages of searching to find one. And then when you go and check it out, it's, you know, some hole in the wall. And these are quality providers throughout the state.
Either Walter or Holly, if I am a consumer, I have a parent that needs some form of service,
and I am absolutely lost about what to do. Obviously, I would think you'd recommend that we call you. What is the process from that point? After I make the initial contact with you and explain my situation, how would you refer or connect me to the proper resources?
Well, one of the things that we're doing and that's so important about the center is that our members throughout the state find themselves on a daily basis helping consumers. So if somebody goes into a big CCRC where there's a $300,000 entry fee and it costs a lot of money to live there, but they don't have anything but their Social Security check and they need affordable housing, our members are not just saying, you know, sorry, we can't help you, and send them on their way. They're already spending time throughout the state helping people that come into their retirement communities or their community service organizations to help them find providers that they can connect with. And so what we're doing, as well as the providers that are listed on this website, they're, part of their commitment is to, and we're giving them tools on the website to use. So in really, they're kind of becoming like small affiliate centers throughout the state. So we're trying to get them, because they're really the experts in aging, the people that are doing that. We can help people if they call to answer your question, but we're also trying to give our providers throughout the state tools that they can use to help connect seniors.
If I understood, what you're saying is that the providers of the association are the referral sources to the most appropriate level of care. If I understood that right.
Right.
Okay. And that's a unique, that's good. And I can see your example was exactly right on board. A resident of a CCRC that only has Social Security, that's not the right provider of service for that individual.
Right.
But those people are the people that are helping him move forward.
Right. And it's really cool because the information that Holly has really worked a year on developing, and this is all under development, so it gets really weekly, it gets better and better. But just to help consumers start really understanding what's going on, and the center is serving as a pilot project for several national, the Picker Institute through the Pioneer Network is doing some research and some piloting some materials to train consumers about person-centered care and the whole culture change movement. So how do consumers understand what to ask for, especially when they go to really more institutional-type settings like nursing homes where, you know, there's a lot of intensive care provided? What questions do they ask to find out how staff are trained? Do staff serve the same residents every day so they have an opportunity to get to know those residents and what their choices are? Do residents that are in a community receiving nursing care, you know, do they have an opportunity to have different kinds of meals served at different times? Mm-hmm. Do they get a choice of whether they want a bath or a shower, and when do they want it? Just all these person-focused areas, which is a part of the whole national culture change movement. And our center, Holly and her cohort, Nina Yu, who is working with the center as well, will be helping set up these pilot sites, and the center will be taking the lead as one of four states that Georgia has chosen to help pilot these materials and start really training consumers to ask for what they want. And we know as baby boomers move into the world of aging services, we know things are going to change a lot. The demand is going to be different. The expectation is going to be different. So we want to prepare providers to focus on quality, to focus on the person that's being served, not just the process of how it's done and what's best for the staff, but who are the residents and what do they want and how do they want to receive their care.
So this is a two-pronged approach. Then you're educating consumers on what to ask, and you're also educating providers on how to deliver mm-hmm. person-centered care.
Yeah, how to be prepared for the future. And our association was instrumental in starting the Culture Change Coalition for Georgia. We were the 31st state. And you can access all that information via our website. But it's very interesting is that we're trying to tie all the picture together through our organizations. And it's very exciting. And Georgia is way ahead of many states in paying attention to looking at aging services in a horizontal fashion. And most of the organizations and consumer advocacy groups and providers work together very well in our state and really partner on focusing on what's best for older Georgians. So it's a real exciting time, even though there's a lot of changes and some of it seems to be doom and gloom. It's still an exciting time to because there's a lot of flexibility and moving forward in new models of care and what does all that look like.
How do you work with the local senior services organizations or like the Atlanta Regional Commission or, you know, Gwinnett County Senior Services, for example?
Yeah, well, many of them are our members. We have all kinds of members, but we're constantly working on, like, we just started a new task group this month looking at low-income housing and mental health issues of the people that will be accessing low-income housing. So we have people from our local area agency on aging through the Atlanta Regional Commission, the Fuqua Center for Late Life Depression, the Department of Community Affairs that deals with housing issues, somebody from our State Department, our association, the Alzheimer's Association, and we just kind of put together task groups. We know each other, and we say, you know, this is going to be an issue on these small low-income housing communities, and how do they deal with the growing mental health needs, especially people that are homeless or being released from prison early that are going to have to be living somewhere, and how do we make sure that other residents living there are safe? So it's just we're constantly connecting, and a lot of us have known each other for 15, 20, 25 mm-hmm. years. So we have a very open means of communication, and people don't really sit on their information. They're willing to access time and staff and come together and really work together for what's best for older Georgians.
I'm going to ask Holly this. Obviously, not having a social worker background, let's say, and coming into this position, has there been one thing that shock's not the right word, but at least you found interesting, surprising about services for seniors?
Pretty much everything, but it really helped me understand where they were coming from. Mm-hmm. With having to develop this website, not knowing anything about it, it was easy for me as a consumer to sit back and be like, all right, well, what would I need to know? Mm-hmm. If this were me, if this were my parent going through this, what would I need to know, and what is the easiest way to go about it? So it was kind of a good thing that I didn't have, you know, a big background in it, because it's easy to overlook the small things. But you know, these are just such great people in this network, and they really are there to help you, like Walter said. So connecting with the providers, they're really understanding, and they'll go out of their way to really help you out and make sure you're getting the care you need.
Yeah, the answer that I was looking for, you spoke to it. For the listeners, and I'm sure, Holly, you will agree, there is a multitude of resources out there. How do you access them? How do you get to it? How do you know which is appropriate and which is not? Who do you trust? Who do you not trust? That's what you're doing, Holly. And that's what the listeners need somehow. And there's a multitude of organizations, just like the association, that provide information. But the listeners have to be able to easily access, talk to someone, make a telephone call, whatever it may be.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to develop with the center. Is actually the first thing that it says is the Center for Positive Aging continues to be your trusted source for the information you need regarding products, services, housing for older Georgians. And that's really what we're trying to do. That's our intent, is to get the providers that are focused on quality, that are focused on their mission, give them the tools that they need to do a better job, to develop their staff, and to try to get the information for consumers to ask these providers so that people are out there just asking the right question.
Walter, I'm going to ask this question, and this is kind of a theory question. if there's one thing you could change immediately to have the most positive impact upon our seniors, is there a magic button that you would like to push to do that?
Well, I would like to see, you know, there's a regulatory piece of what everybody does. And I would love to see regulators and providers for it just as simple as get trained together. So everybody's in the same room hearing the same thing and learning. And so the regulatory, it already kind of has the I got you, you're caught mentality, yeah. Even though a lot of times it's not that way. There's many regulators that really try to partner with providers and help them do a better job. But I think that relationship and trying to get rid of the unnecessary over-regulation that we have, because more and more often staff are spending time touching papers instead of people. And when you hear nurses say, you know, I never get to touch the residents I'm serving, I don't get to spend time with them because I'm doing, you know, 95% of my work is now paperwork. You know, that's just wrong. And if we can figure out how to do that, and I really think this culture change movement and person-centered care, CMS is committed to taking a bite out of the apple, one bite at a time, by looking at dining services and environmental issues and starting to address that, especially in nursing home settings, to really focus on how to really focus on the person and away from just having to be sucked into the process piece, and how that can work, where you can still have enough regulations for people to be in safe environments and to focus on their health, but not to be so overregulated.
Are you finding any like kind of red flags that when you're making contact with these different facilities that if they do certain things, that's kind of a tip off that maybe this isn't like an A-level place, and then other things that you see that, oh, if they're doing certain things, then they probably are a good, solid place.
You know what I found is when I worked at Presbyterian Village, we had people that just walked in the door and they said, something's different here. A lot of times they don't know. But when you walk into a retirement community, whether it be a nursing home or low-income housing or assisted living facility, and you see a community, if the staff and the residents have built a sense of community, that's the person's home. And a person's home can be anywhere. So when staff realize that they're working in a person's home, not that somebody's living where staff work, and they honor that and they honor the elders that are being served, there's a feel, there's an energy, there's a warmness, there's a relationship. And we've had people come to do from other countries. And when they come in to visit our members and they're walking through, and the executive director, who has a big job and a lot of paperwork and works with the board and should be office confined many times, when they're walking through the retirement community and they know every staff's name, they know every resident, they're hugging them, they're asking about their kids, and there's a sense of community and a person is happy in their home, then you can feel that. You don't even have to know what it is. But when you walk in and you're feeling that, that is huge. And anybody can do it.
It's all about relationships.
Yeah.
You know,
it's creating
still
home.
About relationships.
It's creating home. Yeah.
Walter, as we get close to the end of our time, let me ask you one quick question before we close. What keeps you going? What charges your batteries?
Well, I'm excited about what we do. Our members are, you know, providing the residents that they serve many, many times some of the safest, cleanest, nicest, home-like environments that many of these elders have lived in their entire life, especially affordable housing providers, the people that find themselves on Medicaid. And that is so rewarding. And it's exciting when we have regulators and legislators calling us and saying, you know, we know this isn't working. What can we do to make this work? Mm-hmm. And so we can go to our members who are the experts in the field. They do it every day and say, what's hindering you from creating home mm-hmm. for your residents and providing the care that you want to? And how can we fix it? And it's just it's really exciting. Every day is different. Every day is very exciting. Educating staff to do better through our institute, giving them the news, tools, the best processes, the best practices is great. Now that we have our consumer arm with the center and trying to help give consumers tools they need and bridge that gap between aging services and the consumers, it just feels like it's all coming together and we're really moving forward. So it is a very exciting time in our field.
That's great. And as we conclude, if our listeners who might be in this quagmire of information and not know where to begin, what piece of advice might you give someone who is starting this journey to provide service for an elder?
Well, I guess the main thing is to realize that every day that we all are aging. So the aging process happens to us all around us. And so don't wait. You know, as Holly said earlier, a lot of times this is crisis driven. But don't wait. Think about the future. Start looking at healthcare reform, and you know what would that mean to you if you're 50, and what was that going to mean to you in 20 years? So educate yourself, learn, visit retirement communities and people that are serving elders in the community in which you live, and get involved. You can serve on boards. You can do volunteer work. You know, spend time with elders. Elders have the wisdom of, you know, they have the wisdom. So develop relationships, spend time, and learn about the world of aging and the Aging Services Network now, and enjoy it.
Yeah, and I want to add to it exactly what you said. The elders are treasures. They're not something to be ignored. There's real, as you said, real wisdom there. Walter, for our listeners who might need help or might want to contact the Aging Services of Georgia or even the Center for Positive Aging, how can they do that?
All three organizations can be accessed via one phone number, 404-872-9191. And all organizations can be accessed through our main website of Aging Services of Georgia, which is simply www.agingservicesga.org. And everything, you can get to everything from there.
And I just want to jump in here because while we were talking, I looked at the website for the Center for Positive Aging, and Sam, you had asked the question, you know, about where do I start? And this is a website that's very simple, and it's got three big circles on the main page, mm-hmm. and the first one says, where do I begin?
Yep.
So it looks like it's something that's very easy for seniors and their loved ones to use, and so I'd encourage you to go out and take a look at that site.
That's a great statement. My techie partner that can jump in and do this while we're live on the air, I couldn't do it. Thank you, Brad. I certainly appreciate that. Walter, we thank you for being with us. Great job. It sounds like it's a great organization. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you.
Holly, you too. Good job, and we appreciate you being the guest today.
Thank you.
That's it for today, ladies and gentlemen, and for our guest who joined us in Texas as well as in Atlanta, we thank you. For the listeners who tuned in, we want to thank them, and we want to remind those listeners that if they wish to listen to a rebroadcast, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of our nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.